court will proceed to the third case of the day, Santana v. Cook County Board of Review. Ms. De Silva?
Thank you. May it please the court, R. Tamara De Silva, attorney for the appellant, Victor Santana. The district court improperly dismissed plaintiff's fourth amended complaint, which alleged that the Cook County Board of Review singled out the plaintiff and violated his rights under the Due Process Clause, his equal protection rights, his right to free speech under the First Amendment, and that they operate the Cook County Board of Review as a racketeering enterprise, causing direct harm to the plaintiff's business as a property tax consultant. The district court acted improperly in foreclosing two key issues of fact in this case. The first issue being that the Cook County Board of Review banned the plaintiff. The second key issue improperly foreclosed by the district court was that all property tax files thought to be associated with the plaintiff were segregated and red flagged. Plaintiff has consistently alleged these facts. On November 12th, Judge Shader, upon defendant's oral motion, decided to hold an impromptu oral hearing. The purpose of an oral hearing for a Rule 16 conference, the purpose of which was to determine whether the Cook County Board of Review had in fact banned the plaintiff. At this point, no discovery schedule had even been established. The plaintiff objected and asked to take discovery on the issue of the banning, but was refused. The plaintiff also was not permitted to make any written arguments, provide any affidavits, or even brief the issue. At this hearing, Judge Shader decided that only two pieces of evidence would be considered in foreclosing these two issues of fact. The first piece of evidence he considered was a testimony of a secret transcript of the defendants, largely in executive session, a transcript of May 4th, 2009. The second piece of evidence he considered was a Fox News transcript, or news clip, which was at that point not part of the record. Although I cannot discern under what rule Judge Shader was acting, it looked as if a Rule 16 conference was converted into a motion to dismiss under Rule 56. But again, without allowing the plaintiff to even brief the matter or take
discovery. Well, those minutes, they're the actuality of the meeting, aren't they? That whatever ban was issued would be reflected in those minutes. That was it. That was the totality of it, wasn't it?
Actually,
what else would there be?
Judge Tinder, the plaintiff disagrees. That is the defendant's side of the issue, and that is not...
There's another meeting, or there's another public pronouncement, or something of that nature?
That is what the defendants said in a meeting that was not known to the plaintiff or the world before the defendants announced the banning to the world.
It's that meeting that generates the Fox report that was looked at, too, right?
Yes, Judge Schindler.
And it's that Fox report that your client alleges is defamatory to him?
It is, Judge, because the defendants publicly...
So it seems like it's all there. It's all in front of the judge on that issue.
Well, no, Judge, because the Fox News, or the transcript, was in executive session. It was not published as a ban from the private offices, and we don't know what that means, because on the Fox News tape, where the defendants in their own words announced the banning of the plaintiff to the world, the ban was announced in an unqualified manner without any limitation. They said in their own words, the plaintiff was banned from the Cook County Board of Review's offices. Now, actually, the Board of Review's offices comprise exactly half of the entire sixth floor of City Hall. So what does a ban from their offices mean? When the defendants announced through the press that the defendant was banned, there was no qualification, there was no explanation, and we would have wanted to take affidavits and explain that the language in that secret transcript, which was not clarified to the media, wouldn't have made much sense. It, because when you walk into the Board of Review, the offices are open from the counter. There may be private offices of the commissioners that aren't within sight, but their offices are there. But again, we would have wanted to take discovery of this.
And did you explain to Judge Shader that that was what you wanted to discover, maybe take photographs of the office or something of that nature?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Shader did not want to allow any discovery on any of these matters related to the ban other than
and
to look at...
you explained specifically that that's what you wanted to do, get some sort of pictorial exhibition of what the offices were like?
Judge Shader, among other things, there would be much discovery needed on the clarification and the meaning of the word of the ban. And again, nobody has ever been banned, to our knowledge, from the Cook County Board of Review. It is very much like bearing the mark of Cain. You would have to do something quite extraordinary to be that much of a pariah. So what does that mean? Had the plaintiff, and that is our point, if Judge Shader had in not permitting us to take any discovery on the banning issue, denied the plaintiff his due process rights when he foreclosed these two key issues. Had the plaintiff been allowed to brief the matter or put on witnesses and conduct discovery.
You're arguing that Judge Shader deprived Mr. Santana of his due process rights?
Yes, Your Honor. Had the plaintiff been allowed, because had the plaintiff been allowed to brief the matter or can put on witnesses or conduct any discovery, we would have been able to plead and prove and argue that the Board of Review does in fact have a system of coding by which it identifies which property tax files belong to which attorneys, which law firms, which tax consultants, and which are from the plaintiff.
And what's this got to do with Mr. Santana?
Judge Shadid, because Judge Shader did not believe that it was possible, as we had alleged in the plaintiff's complaint, for the Board of Review to segregate the plaintiff's files, because Judge Shader didn't think, well, how could they know which files were from the plaintiff? But that was precisely what we alleged, that they do know.
Does the board have a right to ban anybody from coming behind their counter and roaming the offices? Or is your argument that they singled him out for other reasons? Let's start with the basic. Do they have a right to just ban somebody from walking in and roaming the office?
Judge, nobody has a right to walk into anybody else's private offices.
Okay.
But that is not what we're saying happened. This ban was announced to the public and the world as a ban from the offices of the Cook County Board of Review. It was not qualified at that time as a private ban. And even though a private ban was mentioned in the transcript, we still don't know what that means, because when you look at the actual structure and layout of the Cook County Board of Review, that doesn't make sense on its face. So had plaintiff been allowed to take discovery, we would have been able to prove that the defendants did have a way of identifying which files were from the plaintiff.
And what is that?
It's a system of coding, Your Honor, that we discovered when we filed this complaint.
And if you, and even if that were true, what does that have to do with Mr. Santana being barred from the offices?
Judge Shadid, it goes to the very heart of why the plaintiff was singled out. We allege in our RICO count that the Cook County Board of Review employ the Cook County Board of Review defendants employ that office as a racketeering enterprise in violation of RICO, and that the certain lawyers and tax firms that practice before the Board of Review make substantial political contributions to the campaign funds of the commissioners and their staff and their family. And that is the means by which property taxes are adjudicated. It is a mandatory pay-to-play regime in violation of RICO. So because the plaintiff refused to buy into the system and refused to contribute, his business was irreparably harmed.
Could you describe what access a consultant has to the board as opposed to a taxpayer?
Yes, Judge Palm. The taxpayers can file their own complaints per se, but at a hearing, and then they can appear for themselves at hearings per se, but at only lawyers can appear at hearings on behalf of taxpayers. So consultants, and there is a cottage industry of consultants in this, the city of Chicago itself is a, you know, has a property tax consulting service, but there are many private consultants. They can't appear at hearings. We never.
Are they registered? Are consultants somehow registered with the Board of Review?
No, Judge, you're not.
They just step forward and say they're representing an individual taxpayer?
No, Judge, they don't step forward at any hearing. What they do is that they hold seminars, let's say, or meetings, community meetings, or they and they charge people money to, because how to appeal property taxes is either simple.
This is all done outside the offices of the Board of Review.
Yes,
the
Judge.
Only people that can appear are the attorneys with their client or the taxpayer who's appealing their decision.
Exactly.
Or asking for review.
Exactly. So only attorneys can appear at hearings, but in reality, consultants are like attorneys, help people to petition the Board of Review for.
Do they attend with the attorneys the hearings, the consultants?
Consultants typically don't, because I don't believe they're allowed to.
So consultants seldom get on the premises? Is that of the.
Judge, I don't know that. I would assume.
And the equivalent of what we had a case recently called expediters who process licensing for real estate development and the like. Is it?
They certainly could be like expediters, but as long as expediters doesn't carry any pejorative term. Judge Shader did not think very much of consultants, and he compared what the plaintiff did as a property tax consultant to a messenger, which is completely the opposite of what we've alleged in our complaints. The being a consultant is not a messenger. He is actually, there are many real estate.
It's a messenger who knows somebody.
No, Judge, not necessarily. I mean, he knows the law. He knows property tax law.
But it sure helps if he knows somebody on the inside, doesn't it?
There's an implication that there was something untoward in that statement, and I would vehemently oppose that, because there's no proof of that. We don't say that the Board of Review never, before they said to the plaintiff, of all the people in Cook County and North America, for that matter, this person is so bad as to be, banned, making him the worst pariah and effectively destroying his ability to make a living in Cook County. They never, even to this day, said that. They never pointed to a rule or regulation that he was alleged to have breached. If they had done that, that would be one thing.
Isn't that libel or slander, and isn't that for state court?
Well, Your Honor, it is actually why the plaintiff went to federal court, because he has a liberty interest, which is defamation, plus it's a change of status under the case law that we've cited. He cannot earn a living bearing this mark of Cain.
That's hard for me to understand, because if he can't appear before the board, if he can't be like a lawyer, I guess it would be unauthorized practice of law if he did that, why he can't do everything he would have done otherwise, regardless of what they said.
Yeah, you're saying he can't do it because they said because of the implication they don't want him around their offices, right? That doesn't stop him from holding seminars or helping people fill out their forms and providing a service to people to get to the Board of Review in a proper fashion. But you're saying people won't go to him because this was announced all over the world, right? And that sounds like defamation to me.
Yes, Judge, he does bear the mark of Cain put onto him by the government.
But it's got to be more than that. It's got to be the stigma plus.
It is a stigma plus.
So that he's out of business by virtue of the state.
Judge Schindler, that is exactly what happened, and that is the whole point of our complaint and what brought the plaintiff to federal court, because he has met the stigma plus test. There, as a property tax consultant, there is no other place for him to go in Cook County other than the Cook County Board of Review. When the Cook County Board of Review said, we've taken the unprecedented step.
Yeah, I don't understand that. If he doesn't go there, if he can't go there to represent them, that's not part of the business. The business is getting the information and putting the applications together. I don't see how that's impinged in any way by that.
Judge Schindler, that's precisely what we've alleged, and this is why one of the key facts foreclosed by Judge Shader was so critical, and why his improper foreclosure of it so damaged the plaintiff's case unfairly, because the Board of Review did know, and they do have a way of identifying which files are from property tax consultants, law firms, lawyers, and the plaintiff. They do know that. And the last point.
Is that because the lawyer is a person of record, right? When a lawyer appears, how is the consultant identified in the file?
Again, we would have loved to be allowed to prove this, because there is a system of coding that the Board of Review uses. It is why we pled the RICO count. They are able to tell, because some of the largest law firms that practice at the Cook County Board of Review achieve the largest reductions. The people at the Board of Review and their staff.
So they know who the lawyers are. We get that. How do they know Mr. Santana helped me prepare my Board of Review appeal form?
Because the attorneys have codes. And all the attorneys in the law firms have attorney codes of practice. Then the consultants, files that come in, large quantities of files that come in from consultants, let's say, are segregated automatically, because there's a presumption and a suspicion these aren't from attorneys, but there's a bunch of them. So even if the plaintiff used, a border collie to deliver the files, and everybody used indiscriminate dogs, they would still raise a red flag, but they are able to tell. In fact, after the filing of this complaint, there have been news reports of the Board of Review giving preferential tax treatment to family members of staff that practice there, because they are able to tell. And I'm so sorry that I've taken so long, but if I may have a brief rebuttal.
I will allow that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silva. Mr. Bertocchi.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Joel Bertocchi. I represent Mr. Berrios, Mr. Giaconetti, and the Board, and I'm also presenting argument today on behalf of the other defendants. The ban was expressly limited both in the executive session and in the public session that followed, which people would have been able to see. It was described in a limited way on the Fox News story, which was submitted to the Court by the plaintiff. So the notion that there was no discovery permitted or that Judge Shader prohibited discovery is just wrong. And you have all the transcripts in our appendix.
Well, Mr. Bertocchi, what provisions of the rules was Judge Shader acting under when he...
He was acting under Rule 16, and it was made clear right from the beginning, because early in the case, during the state case, when the complaint was being amended to the point where Judge Shader upheld the second amended complaint, my colleague, Mr. Pushis, on several occasions asked Judge Shader to consider this issue using his Rule 16 authority. And so I'm not sure why Mr. Silva says she doesn't know what rule was enforced, because it was cited several times.
Well, in issuing the ruling, did he make that clear?
I'm not sure. I can't say from memory whether he cited Rule 16 at the time, but it had always been proposed that way. And Rule 16 could operate in this instance in two ways, and I think you could interpret what Judge Shader did two ways. One would be, and the Wright Miller treatise that we cited points this out, you can make an analogy to Rule 56, what is now Rule 56G, I think. It used to be, at the time of the case that all this was going on, it was D, now it's G, where a judge can, through other litigation that goes on in the case, identify a particular issue of material fact and make a determination that it is whether it's disputed or not. Now, you could call that something like a mini summary judgment or something else, and you could interpret Judge Shader as what he doing that under Rule 16. But remember that what Judge Shader did once he figured out that this that there was no dispute and that the ban only extended to the private office areas, he did not dismiss the claim, the count or the case. He did not bar any claim based on the ban. What he did is he treated it as a matter of pleading, which was still at the stage that they were in. He said, you can persist in this claim, but you have to plead it accurately. And so the plaintiff, he told the plaintiff, you have to amend your complaint to conform to what really is the only evidence anyone had brought to his attention. And you'll see that, you know, Judge Shader, far from barring any discovery, he took what was offered to him by both sides. And if any of these affidavits or anything that they wanted to do had been something they were interested in, they could have proposed it. But it's not in the transcript.
Was the complaint amended after that ban determination?
Yes, it was. And as a matter of fact, that was the point I was just coming to. Judge Shader made the determination that it was only a ban from the private office areas and told them to file the third amended complaint that reflected that. And they did. But then, unbidden, they filed a fourth amended complaint that doesn't refer to the ban at all. And so, for that reason, essentially the ban claim was abandoned, because the fourth amended complaint is what Judge Shader ruled on. And although he did talk about the ban because it had been in the issue had been in the case for so long, really that claim was pretty much dropped, because the fourth amended complaint, the one that he considered on motions, the one that he finally dismissed, only talks about the segregation of files, what Ms. De Silva refers to as red flagging. But there really is no ban claim left in the case by them. The ban was expressly limited. You can look at the transcript, including the public part. You can look at the Fox News story, which says ban from the offices. And as Judge Shader said, the contention that it was broader than that, that it could be read to encompass the lobby or the sixth floor or something like that, really it can't be fairly made. As I indicated, there was no prohibition of discovery. Judge Shader was more than willing to accept anything that would be put forth. He's been doing this for a long time, and he's not going to keep, if he's going to pick out an issue under Rule 16, he's not going to bar somebody from discovery if there is any discovery to be had. But none was proposed at the time. When he said, I'll read the transcript, the only thing Mr. Silva mentioned was the Fox News story, and he said, fine, let me see that too. And he looked at it, and you have it in the record. Mr. Silva talks about this coding system, but I think as the court realizes, in order to determine that a case came from Victor Santana in some sense, you'd have to have the information. And that information simply would not be on paper. Consultants have no official status. They have no more status before the board than you would have if you advised a neighbor sitting at his kitchen table about how to fill out a property tax form. Unless he walks to the counter and turns it in and somebody sees that, you're not going to know it's a Victor Santana client, if he indeed has any clients. And I think that's why Judge Shader made a determination that this could not have plausibly injured his business. Because you can actually, you don't even have to send a border collie in. You can mail property tax appeals to the board and not show up at all. And so the fact that he couldn't go around behind the counter was simply not any kind of an impairment. Finally, I want to talk about there was mention of the Stigma Plus test and the damage to Mr. Santana's purported business as a consultant. But another aspect of the liberty interest test is that it affects some official position, some official right that he has. Most of these cases involve employment actions where people are either not hired or fired. It might involve something like licensure if a consultant had an official status. But this is purely an issue of Mr. Santana's desire to obtain private employment. He hasn't worked at the board in 10 years. He's not seeking a job with the board. He's not seeking official status with the board. He is seeking to conduct an exclusively private activity. And as a result, there is no liberty interest implicated, because it is, as I think the court suggested, really just at the most a defamation case. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude.
Did you want to say anything about the RICO claim?
I can talk about the RICO claim, Your Honor. I think that Judge Shader clearly, the same sort of notion that he had, I think the correct notion, that there was no plausible claim of harm to Mr. Santana's business animated his ruling. But we also believe he could have ruled on an alternative ground that we thought was just as clear, which is the remoteness between what Mr. Santana alleges as his pattern and what he alleges as harm to him. Now, his allegations, I mean, I drafted indictments. I believe a couple of members of the court drafted indictments in earlier parts of your lives. 95% of his RICO count looks like something that would have been drafted by the U.S. attorney. It talks about this general pattern of pay-to-play and all of this stuff. And then you get to the part about Mr. Santana, and the conduct is not the same, the type of extortion is not the same, what it is that supposedly was gotten out of him was not the same. It has nothing to do with lawyers making campaign contributions and getting property tax withdrawals.
Well, but he alleges, though, Berrios is demanding kind of a contribution, free political consulting on his campaign. Isn't that similar to
Well, it's similar in the sense that it comes in the he's alleging extortion in one and extortion in all of the other. But it's a different kind of extortion. It's one person instead of the whole board. What it clearly is not is part of this corrupt system that he alleges in the other 95% of, or 99% of his RICO count that goes on. It doesn't have anything to do with lawyers making contributions and getting reductions. It has to do with, I want you to, you know, work for me for free, allegedly, and, you know, obviously you dispute that this happened, but I want you to work for me for free, and there's going to be some unspecified economic harm. Even in his allegations, he doesn't say that Berrios said to him, and you won't get the same property tax reductions that supposedly all these lawyers get. And so it's just totally different in character and outside the pattern. And if it's outside the pattern, it's not RICO injury, and he doesn't have any standing to bring a RICO claim on that basis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mrs. Silva, you may have 2 minutes.
Thank you. The Board of Review did not ban property tax consultants. They do have a very – there's a significant practice of property tax consultants that practice at the Board of Review. Had they had wanted – had they banned all property tax consultants, I wouldn't be here today. And in terms of what Mr. Bertacci said, that Judge Shader sustained the RICO count in plaintiff's second amended complaint. It has not changed. It is identical. On December 16, 2010, the court's sui sponte, based upon its review of this secret transcript, dismissed the plaintiff's 1983 claims and suggested that the plaintiff replead the RICO count, but this time omitting all mention of the word ban or else face Rule 11 sanctions. I did so in the fourth amended complaint. But the RICO count is that was sustained and
are you saying the judge directed you to amend from the third amended to the fourth amended?
Yes, Judge. He said that I would, unless I removed all mention of the word ban, I would face Rule 11 violations, which I did not wish to incur, so I did so. We've cited cases proving that this is a defamation plus in a case where there's a protected liberty interest. Again, Green versus Elroy, Dupuy versus Samuels, and Fleury versus Clayton. But my last point is that the defendants and the appellees' objections to the RICO count are identical to what they made in the second amended complaint and were not upheld. And I believe their objections to a RICO count are identical even in the appellee's brief. But again, Judge Shader upheld the RICO count in the second amended complaint, and it has not changed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.